So, again, please remember, this is not yet the class. The class begins tomorrow, and all that I did in the previous two sessions and all that I want to do in this session is culture. So, you know, you should be aware of the Jones polynomial, even though it's not quite directly relevant to anything that we did. You should be aware of the Alexander polynomial, even though, well, it is directly relevant, but the specific said things we said are not quite relevant. And you should be aware that kind of, I like to think about things, or what I care about is algebraic structures on spaces of knots. Okay, so, and that will appear always. So, right, it's a circuit algebra or a planar algebra, or I will always care about algebraic structures on spaces of knots. And then the last thing that I want to mention, again, for cultural reasons, is in some sense perpendicular to the subject of my... So Hovanov homology, in some sense, is perpendicular to the main subject of my of the class. But still, it's so fashionable now that you cannot not mention it. You cannot not mention about, you know, and mention the fact that later there will be one or two minor contact points or potential contact points. So this really is nothing to do, has nothing to do with the subject of my class. Anyway, I will follow a handout. I think I only printed the first page because the rest is not very relevant. Again, you know, even if things will sound abstract, at the end they correspond to computations. And these are actual numbers, okay? And finally, sort of a tiny bit of a story about why bother. So, well, it somehow doesn't make sense, but we used to think we know, until Hovanov, so until 10 years ago, we used to think that we kind of know the game board. Okay? And here's what it looks like. We know kind of, we basically know the game board. There is the Jones polynomial, there is the Alexander polynomial. You may be able to say an occasional new thing about them, but you basically know where logically they all fit and where they fit with Reshetich Kuraev invariants and with finite tap invariants and all that. And then all of a sudden, Hovanov found that the J box, I think it's J in Monopoly, but Jones in... So the J box actually has a dimension that nobody expected. And then there was a huge amount of interest, and everybody was hoping that everything else will bump to 3D, and much of the rest indeed got bumped sort of in this extra dimension, but not everything yet, and in particular, Alexander-related things, I think, are not satisfactorily bumped into 3D. Okay? But anyway, so a tiny bit about philosophy. So I want to kind of make completely bizarre introduction to categorification. What's categorification? So please forgive me if this is too bizarre. Okay, and only then I will go and talk about the actual categorification of the Jones polynomial. So what is categorification? In some sense, sort of, the complicated thing is to uncategorify, is to decategorify. Categorification is somehow the natural thing. The thing that takes a lot of abstraction is to realize that a set of three cows is somehow a red cow, a green cow, and a blue cow is in some sense the same as a set with three pigs, right? And I think it's a major leap that kids at about, I don't know, 5 years old, or maybe 2 years old, I don't know, sort of make by identifying, by somehow realizing that there is an equivalence relation on the world of finite sets, okay? And but So categorification is to undo this, in some sense. Categorification is when you get a 3, you specify which 3 it is. Is it 3 cows or is it 3 pigs? And so, in some sense, it's the most natural thing there is. So, examples. Okay? So, for the natural numbers, how do you categorify them? Well, they become finite sets. In fact, they were some finite sets before they were natural numbers. Right? And equalities is bijections. So when are two sets, or what replaces equalities is bijections. And inequalities are injections or surjections, right? So, for example, let's categorify the statement 2n choose n is equal to the sum of n choose k squared. So this is a binomial identity. I hope you all know it. Do you? So, I mean, if you take a line in the Pascal triangle, Pascal it's called? Mm-hmm. So if you take, you know, 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 1, 3, 3, 1, and you sum the squares, so here you will get 1 plus 9 plus 9 plus 1, that's 20, and 20 is also 6 choose 3. Okay? So let's categorify this identity. Well, 2n, so basically, instead of 2n, I need a set with 2n elements. So take a set X, finite set X, and multiply it by 1 and 2. Okay, so now you have 2n elements. Okay, the 1 copy and the 2 copy of the set. And within that set, look at all ways of choosing X elements. So choosing n of those 2n's. Okay, n of those 2n elements. By the way, this by chance, completely by chance, is related to what I said in the last hour, but I had no such intention. Anyway, the claim is that you can find a bijection between this and the union over all k of choosing of the Cartesian products of choosing k element from x and again choosing k elements from x. And I'm assuming you all know that. And if not, it's a lovely exercise to actually find this bijection. Okay? But that's what it would mean to categorify some combinatorial identity. But you see, now suppose I wanted to categorify negative numbers. So what are negative numbers? What does it mean I have minus $3? It means I owe some $3. Okay? But 3 is a specific thing, right? It should become specific. It's not an abstract 3. So in other words, sum should be holding, three certificates, each one indicating that I owe him a pig. Okay? That's what negative 3 would mean from my perspective. Okay? Or said differently, it's a pair of sets. It's the set of things that I have and the set of things that I owe, or the set of certificates that somebody else is holding that I owe him stuff, or her, sorry. And in fact, you can make it even more complicated. So you could also talk about sets like that with a partial bijection between them, which sort of corresponds to cancel debts. So, you know, I hold 3 cows. Philippe is holding 5 certificates that say that I owe him a cow. And 2 of the certificates are matched with 2 of the cows that I have. Okay? So that's a categorified negative 2, I believe. Okay? But then you can make it even more complicated. Okay? So maybe I have 5 cows and Philippe is holding 6 certificates saying that I owe him cows, and 2 of these certificates are matched with 2 of my cows, but I actually have proofs that seven certificates are actually fake. Okay, and 2 of those are matched with 2 of the certificates that Philip holds. Okay, and well, let's ignore the rest. And it seems that I have, well, I don't know, my net value, what it is. Okay, so this is an even more complicated way of defining the negative numbers. So the negative numbers, instead of being, well, just numbers, they are a sequence of sets with possible cancellations between them. And what equality means needs work, and I will not do this work right now because I want to do it for vector spaces. So here's a weaker categorification. So sometimes, you know, I can't quite say that this cow is cancelled against this debt. Maybe I can only say that sort of this debt is cancelled against some linear combination of these cows. So it's somehow a weaker notion. So we do the same in the category of vector spaces. So 3 becomes a vector space of dimension 3, or even better, it's a chain of vector spaces with maps in between them. If you go twice, so the map is sort of what here cancels what there, okay? If you go twice, you must get 0, because otherwise it's somehow a contradiction in the interpretation, right? Because, I mean, I can't at the same time say hello, Karin. So I can't at the same time say that that this cow is canceled against this debt certificate, and at the same time say that this debt certificate is fake. Okay? So I need this condition, and such that the alternating sum of dimensions is equal to 3. Okay? And a simple-minded statement from homology is that the alternating sum of dimensions is equal to the alternating sum of dimensions of homology groups. Okay, so categorification in this vector space sense, or in this complex and homology sense, is somehow a weakening of what we really want, what we would really want categorification to be. We would really want it to be making every number a set, but we have to settle for less. Okay. So the next thing is now how to categorify Laurent polynomial. So I'm holding it the wrong way. So a Laurent polynomial will become a chain of vectors or a sequence of vector spaces, one for each coefficient. Okay, so it will become a vector space, which is the direct sum of vector spaces, and I will define the q dimension of a vector of such a vector space, which is a direct sum, so the q dimension of a graded vector space, to be the sum of q to the j times the dimension of vj. Okay, so categorifying a polynomial will be finding a vector space whose q dimension is that polynomial. Or better, or in fact maybe worse, it will be to find a chain of vector spaces with maps between them such that d squared is equal to 0. And d does not change degrees, so the degree of d is 0. So it maps a degree k element here to a degree j element here to a degree j element here, such that the q Euler characteristic, meaning the alternating sum of the q dimensions, is f. Okay? And one last thing, what does multiplication by q mean? Multiplication by q is just adding 1 to the degree of all elements. So, or multiplication by q to the l corresponds to taking a vector space V or a whole complex V and replacing and adding L to the degree of each element, which amounts to saying that in the if you have added L to any degree, then the piece of degree J is the original piece of degree J minus L. Okay? So, sorry, that was a bizarre introduction to categorification, and now I want to give a standard introduction to the categorification of the Jones polynomial. Is it okay? Okay. So first of all, what's the Jones polynomial? So this is slightly different normalization than the one I used before, but it produces the same answer. So if you have a k circles, you map it to q plus q inverse to the power k. I think in the normalization of earlier, it was negative q to the 1/2 times minus q to the 1, whatever, some other thing. I think the q of now is equal to iq squared of before, or maybe iq to the 1/2 of before, where I is the square root of minus 1. Okay, so, but other than change of parametrization, it's the same Jones polynomial. And the positive crossing becomes, well, before I had a crossing goes to something times the 0 smoothing plus something else times the 1 smoothing. And then I had to make a correction with the Rice. So now I'm including the Rice correction. So a positive crossing will become q times a 0 smoothing minus q squared times a 1 smoothing, and a negative crossing, well, whatever. So that's the Jones polynomial, same as before, but with a slight normalization change. So how do I compute the Jones polynomial of the trefoil? So one way is to write a computer program. But the other way is to actually compute, okay, to do it by hand. So I guess the trefoil is simple enough that I've actually done it by hand. Okay. By the way, how many of you have seen all of this before? To how many of you is this a complete waste of time? Okay.
Wouldn't put it this way.
So you take the trefoil and you look at all of its smoothings. But you see, since it has 3 crossings, it has 8 smoothings, and these 8 smoothings corresponds to the strings 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, and so on, basically all strings of length 3 in the alphabet 0 and 1, which are also the vertices of a three-dimensional cube. So here's the three-dimensional cube, and right, you can kind of see can you see that it's a cube? It's a bit hard. I guess this is the upper face, zones 4. This is the lower face, zones 4. And you can see that the upper face is above the lower face, but slightly tilted. Okay? So this is the 0, 0, 0 entry. This is the 1, 1, 1 entry. This is the smoothing corresponding to the 0, 0, and 0 entry, and it's just 2 cycles. This is the smoothing corresponding to the 1, 1, 1 entry, and it's 3 cycles. And again, the thing that corresponds to it, the polynomial that corresponds to that smoothing, is, for every plus smoothing, for every 1 smoothing of a positive crossing, all crossings here are positive, we had to take a q squared, I believe. Should I check? In a positive crossing, you get a q squared for every 1 smoothing. Okay? So the contribution from the 1, 1, 1 smoothing will be q to the 6 times the value of a circle, which is q plus q inverse, raised to the power 3. Okay? Likewise, there is a contribution for each smoothing. And to get the overall Jones polynomial, what I need to do is I need to sum all of these contributions. So, but the way I wrote it, I didn't worry about signs. There are actually signs here. So, let's see. For the trefoils, there are no negative crossings. So basically for every one smoothing there is a negative sign. Okay? So if I wanted to do the sums correctly, I would have to take the boxes with zero ones with coefficient plus, the boxes with one one with coefficient minus, the boxes with two ones with coefficient plus, and the boxes with three ones with coefficient minus. So I draw the cube such that it's sort of skewered along its main diagonal. Okay? And then I sum all of these boxes, where there is only one, and the corresponding entry is this. I sum all of these boxes, the sum is this. I sum all of this, and then I take the alternating sum of the column sums, and this gives me the Jones polynomial. Okay? So how do I categorify this? I suppose that was the proof that it's invariant under Rademeister 2, but we've seen it, so I will not show it again. So how do I categorify this? So what I want to do is, or what is the statement of categorification? The statement is that you can, maybe I should write it as a theorem. Or is it written in the handout already? I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't quite write it as a formal theorem, so let me write it now. So theorem by Kovanov, mostly, which says the following: for any link diagram, D, you can associate. You associate, or there exists an association, or a chain complex, what should we call it, bracket of D. So bracket of D is a chain complex of vector spaces. So basically bracket D, R going to bracket D, R, is it plus one or minus one according to my conventions? I don't remember. Plus one, and with differential D, of graded vector spaces, so all of these vector spaces are graded, such that one, the graded Euler characteristic, so meaning of this complex, meaning the sum over R of minus 1 to the R, the Q dimension of the R piece, is just the Jones polynomial of the knot corresponding to D. Okay? Two, the complex itself is not an invariant. Oh, sorry. And here, by the way, I could have replaced it by the Euler characteristic you can compute either using the chain spaces or by the homologies. So here I could have replaced it with the homologies. So two, the chain complex itself is not invariant, but its homologies are. So dim HR, or the dimensions of the homology groups, or in fact even the Q dimensions, are invariant under the usual Rademeister moves, Rademeister 1, Rademeister 2, and Rademeister 3. And well, 3 is actually not due to Chovanov. So Chovanov just observed these two, or wrote this complex, and computed it for 1 or 2 knots, but had no, not enough computational power to compute it for arbitrary knots. But then the statement is that these invariants, so these dimensions of the homology groups, is a stronger, strictly stronger invariant than J. So you find an invariant which from which you can recover J, because it's an alternating sum. So J is an alternating sum of dimensions of homology groups, but it's actually strictly stronger than J. And this is the surprise. This is the thing that nobody expected. Okay? Yeah, what's the difference? Yeah, I'm not sure which is, if it's a chain complex or a co-chain complex. What is my convention?
Co-chain,
I suppose. So the ranks increase, the homological dimensions increase. If you're used to singular homology or something where HR corresponds to cycles of dimension R, then it actually matters if it goes up or down. Okay? But here it's a completely formal decision. The chain complex does not represent, the R's don't represent dimensions. So it's completely a formal decision, and you could have reversed it with no cost. Okay.
Are the homology groups themselves an invariant?
Yes. Oh, the homology groups themselves?
Uh-huh.
Their isomorphism classes are invariant. But they themselves are somehow so they're invariant up to isomorphism. Okay, so I mean I wrote it as dimensions, but in fact it's all over the integers, and you get isomorphic abelian groups. Yes. So the groups themselves are invariants, but it's non-trivial, and it's significantly harder than the statement that their isomorphism classes are invariant. So just to explain what is the distinction. Okay, what does it mean? It's not even obvious what do I mean by the groups are invariant versus the isomorphism groups are invariant. And between groups are invariant or just their isomorphism classes. So the distinction is the following. So suppose that you have two pictures of the same knot. So, I really only know how to draw one knot. So suppose that's one picture, And suppose, I guess, here's another picture of the same knot, okay? Then there are homology groups corresponding to this picture. There are homology groups corresponding to that picture. But it's possible, okay, now suppose I could go from this picture to this picture by a sequence of Rademeister moves. Okay, so in fact, going from this picture to that picture by a sequence of Rademeister moves, well, there is only one move, right? But suppose it was a lengthier process. Okay, then to each move, so over here there will be some collection of homology groups. Over here there will be some collection of homology groups, and to each move, there will be corresponding an isomorphism of the corresponding groups. So you will get a sequence of isomorphisms between the homology groups corresponding to the first knot and the homology groups corresponding to the last knot, and therefore, these homology groups are isomorphic to these homology groups. Okay? However, you could have gone from this knot to that knot by a different sequence of Rademeister moves. Sometimes you have more than one choice of which Rademeister moves to choose, to take. Okay? So you would have a different sequence of isomorphism. So you will have the homology groups of this knot. Well, this is the same as that. And you will have the homology groups of the final knot. This is the same as that. But you will go through a different sequence of isomorphisms to get from this knot to that knot. You have a new proof that this homology is isomorphic to that homology. But that's actually bad, because, I mean, they're still isomorphic, but it's not clear that it's the same isomorphism. So, a priori, it's not clear that the group itself is somehow an invariant, that the meaning of the group itself is an invariant is that that there would be a canonical isomorphism between the group associated with this picture and the group associated with that picture. Okay, so the statement is that, in fact, the groups are isomorphic. So, in fact, this sequence of isomorphisms is equal to that sequence of isomorphisms. But that's way harder than merely the fact that that this is an isomorphism and that this is an isomorphism. Okay? Sorry, I went way too far. I mean, we're not yet even defining the homology.
So that would also mean the groups are stronger invariant, would it?
I'm not sure in what sense. I mean, how would you compare? I mean, I no comment. I think I'd rather go on and define those groups. Okay? So, in a sense, I'm done. In a sense, there is nothing to do, nothing left to do. Because everything is already, in a sense, on the board. The radical thing here was the guess that such a thing exists. The moment you've decided to look for such a thing, in the moment you have written the Jones polynomial, the definition of the Jones polynomial like that, as a sum of monomials over skewered cubes, everything else is sort of forced. So any kind of reasonably smart mathematician would have come up with the definition, could stop the lecture now, go home and figure out the rest. Okay? So this is somehow theoretical, because the reality is that we're none of us is so smart. Very few of us are as smart as Chovanov. But still, I would like to make this point that after this, everything is natural. So the basic idea will be... Wait, where am I? Right, sorry. So the basic idea will be to replace every monomial in the definition, sorry, not monomial, every term in the computation of the Jones, in every box, by a vector space whose Q dimension is written right here. So instead of, so corresponding to this smoothing, I want to put a vector space whose Q dimension is written here. Corresponding to this smoothing, I want to put a vector space whose Q dimension is written above it, and so on. So this will define a collection of vector spaces. This will define the chain groups. And then I will want to put something for the along the edges to make the differential. And you will see that if, even this is essentially forced. Okay? So, how do I make a vector space whose dimension is q plus q inverse squared multiplied by q cubed? Well, I take a, so basically I see a repeating term here, q plus q inverse. So I start with a vector space whose dimension is q plus q inverse. How do you find, what's a vector space whose dimension is q plus q inverse? Well, you just produce it artificially. So you let V be the vector space of sort of honest dimension 2, so the vector space generated by two generators, but where you're declaring that the degree of v plus minus of v plus is equal to plus 1 and the degree of v minus is minus 1. So in other words, this is the direct sum of the span of v plus with the span of v minus, and this lives entirely in degree 1, this lives entirely in degree negative 1, so the dimension is of v is the dimension of the degree 1 part times q to the 1, so it's 1 times q to the 1, plus the dimension of the degree minus 1 part times q to the minus 1, so it's 1 plus q to the minus 1, so it's q plus q inverse. Okay? And then you can check that, or maybe first of all we should define what it is. So if you have two graded vector spaces, so if v is the direct sum of vj, and if w is the direct sum of wk, then v tensor w is again a graded vector space because v tensor w is the direct sum, direct sum over all m's of, for each m you take all ways of writing m as j plus k, and you write, and here you take vj tensor vk, right?
W.
So it's natural, so since this corresponds to degree j and this corresponds to degree k, it's kind of reasonable to declare that this will be of degree j plus k, so this whole thing will be the degree m part of v tensor w, So this is by declaration v tensor m, the degree, v tensor w, the degree m part. So I've decomposed v tensor w into a direct sum. Okay? And then it's very easy to check that, well, this is parallel to the formula of multiplying polynomials, right? If you have the product of f of two polynomials, it's how the coefficients work out. So this becomes the fact that the q dimension of v tensor w is equal to the q dimension of v times the q dimension of w. Okay? Which amounts to saying that, or from which it follows that the q dimension of any vector space raised to the power k is the q dimension of that vector space raised to the power k as polynomials. This is as tensor products, this is as polynomials. So, if I want a vector space whose dimension is q plus q inverse squared, I'll just take v tensor squared. Okay? And if I want to add 3 to all degrees, I'll shift all degrees by 3. If I want to multiply by q cubed, I'll shift all degrees, I'll add 3 to all degrees. Okay? So now it's clear what to put, which vector space to put in each box. Maybe I should be slightly more pedantic. Really, this is not V tensor squared. It's a categorified 2, in some sense. It's not just 2, but the factors correspond to the cycles. Okay? So you sort of take, you just declare that the first tensor factor corresponds to this cycle and the second one corresponds to that one, or something like that. Okay? So now every square has a vector space in it, and I can take the direct sum of the vector spaces along the columns, and I'll get the complex. I suppose I'll call it the complex of the trefoil in degree 0, the complex of the trefoil in degree 1, and so on. So the complex of the trefoil in degree 1 is just the direct sum of all the vectors in it, all the vector spaces above it. I did not yet tell you what the differential is, but whatever I will tell you, I am done with part 1. Okay? So part 1 is clearly not the main part. Okay? I found the complex whose Euler characteristic is the Jones polynomial. The problem is, well, and this does not depend on the differential. I could take the differential to be 0. But if I will take the differential to be 0, the homology will not be an invariant. Okay? So, I've completely lost track of what I've photographed and what I haven't. So I think this one was the only one I haven't, but okay.
Also, your camera will die in 15 minutes if that's an issue.
Well, so be it. Okay. So now I need to tell you how to construct the differential. And again, the picture suggests how to do it. So I want to put a map along each edge, and then I want to take the differential, the overall differential, to be the sum of all of these maps. Okay? If this is to be a differential, by the way, am I wasting your time? I sort of... Okay. So, if this is to be a differential, it must be that if I go from this vector space to any of the summons, two columns to the right, I get 0. But going from a vector space on one column to a vector space two columns above, there are always two ways to do it. Okay, I can, so basically I need to flip two bits from zeros to ones, and I could do it in either order. Which amounts to saying that going from here to here, I could go either this way or that way. So the sum of these two should be zero. And there comes another tiny clever bit. Okay? The tiny clever bit is it's a bit hard to think of anti-commuting diagrams. So really I want to put stuff on the edges so that all squares will be anti-commuting. This is a bit hard, but there is a standard way of turning totally anti-commuting diagrams to totally commuting diagrams. So instead I will try to write a totally commuting thing. Let me tell you what is the standard way. I think it's written somewhere in the... Basically, you put signs. So, the n-dimensional cube is also the set of the basis of the exterior algebra. Or the vertices correspond to a basis of the exterior algebra. So, so this is like in calculus, okay? So, and I think the correspondence is clear. So, a sequence of zeros and ones correspond to which dx's, dxi's you take, okay? So, but then there are operators that correspond to going up along any one of the three axes, namely, taking the exterior product with dx will always add a dx, and if a dx already is there, it will just map to zero, okay? Taking the exterior with dy will add a dy, and taking the exterior with dz will add on the third coordinate. But you see, taking the exterior product with dx, sometimes, if you start from dy, will give you dy wedge dx, which is the negative of what is written here. So you'll put a minus sign along the edges that are thus, that's where you get this opposite sign. And then the claim is that around each face, there is an odd number of minus signs. Once you put signs in this way, around each face, there will be an odd number of minus signs. And essentially, this corresponds to the fact that dxi wedge dxj is equal to negative dxj wedge dxi. So if you take the exterior product, well, if you take any omega and you wedge it with this, you get the negative of omega wedged that. Going up along one coordinate and then along the other is the opposite of going along the second and then along the first. That's exactly what I said. Are you still with me? Okay. So take these signs and superimpose them on this diagram. And now, where am I? And now, all I need, And now all I need is to give you a commuting array of maps. Because once you multiply them with the sum, with the signs, they will become anti-commuting. Okay, so that was a little trick. And this done, I still need to tell you what to put on the edges. But there are two types of edges, okay? So along an edge, what you do is you flip one smoothing from being a zero smoothing to a one smoothing. There are two possibilities for what this could do. It could either take two cycles and flip them, sorry, you take this smoothing and you flip it to go like that, so it will become a single cycle, right? Or it could take a single cycle with sort of this is the smoothing, and when you flip it, it will become two cycles. So the natural thing to do is to say, so, I lost the mouse. The natural thing to do is to say, so you know what, let's look for it in reality. So here I have re-smoothed this crossing, the area corresponding to this crossing. So from a single cycle, it became two cycles. And I suppose here I am re-smoothing the part next to this smoothing, and it becomes it. And from a single cycle, it becomes two cycles, but the remaining cycle is untouched. Right? So the reasonable thing to do is to say that is to pick two maps. One map corresponding to merging two cycles, and one map corresponding to breaking a cycle into two, and here you will use the breakup map to break this into two, tensor by the identity for the factor that's unchanged. Okay? And in general, you will use either the breaking map or the merging map and do nothing on the remaining components. Okay? So I just need to tell you, so to make this construction, I just need to give you one map, call it M, going from V tensor V into V, and another map, call it delta, going from V into V tensor V. Okay? If I give you that, everything is specified. But you see, I have to give you these maps in such a way that all squares will be commutative. So now I have to look at what are the possibilities for the squares. All faces will be commutative. So I need to check what are the possibilities for the squares. Well, it turns out that there are three types of faces. So either you have three cycles. Here are the two smoothings that are in, right? In every face, you flip up two smoothings, two sides. So here, if you flip up these two, this side, you will get the first two cycles will merge and the last one is unchanged. And now if you flip up this side, you will just get a single long cycle. Right? And if you do it the other way around, so you first flip up this, you'll get this picture, and now flipping up this, we'll get this picture. Okay? So this really corresponds to, the diagram of vector spaces it corresponds to is V tensor V tensor V goes to V tensor V, goes to V tensor V, goes to V, okay? And the maps here are, well, this map is, I guess, one tensor. This cycle is untouched, so it's one tensor M. This is M tensor one, and both of these are just M's. So the condition is that one tensor M followed by M is equal to M tensor one followed by M. And if you've seen this before, this is what's called associativity.
Is this intentionally very much inspired by Lie Bai algebras? With these multiplication and co-multiplication maps?
The notation is inspired by Lie Bai algebras, but I'm not done. Okay? So you get associativity. There is also a reverse operation, a sort of a reverse situation where you br- up a single cycle into three cycles in two different ways. And so this is associativity of M, and there is also co-associativity of delta. And then there is a third case, which in fact it corresponds to reversing half the arrows on this picture. So basically, if you start from a situation like this, and you break and then merge on the other side, or you merge and then break. Okay? So, and that is not, this is a condition of compatibility between M and delta, but it's not the one coming from bialgebras. So the answer is no, it's not bialgebras. But it's some compatibility condition. Anyway, wait, I'm not done. So things are even better. First of all, you see, I have no a priori ordering between the cycles. So the merge map should be symmetric. So M should be symmetric, because I don't know which cycle is first and which one is second. Also, well, delta should also be symmetric. I mean, if I compose delta with flipping the two components, since I never had a way of telling which one is first and which one is second, I must choose delta, which is symmetric. Okay? So in fact, delta is, so M is also commutative, and delta is co-commutative. Okay? And finally, if you look at the picture once again, which picture, sorry, I should have at least repartitioned the pictures. But anyway, if you look at this picture once again, you will find that there are degree shifts. And the degree shifts in adjacent rows, adjacent columns, are differ by one. So the map M, but you see, I want the differential to have degree zero overall, because otherwise I will not have this. Otherwise, I will not have that the Euler characteristic computed using the chain groups is the same as the Euler characteristic computed using the homologies. So I want the differentials to have degree zero. When you take account of the degree shifts, it means that M and delta should both be of degree, I believe, negative one. In a minute I will tell you. No, I went too far. Yeah, so M and delta should both be of degree negative one. M and delta of degree negative one. But that essentially defines M and delta. So you see, I should tell you what M is on all combinations. So V plus times V minus times V plus, V plus times V plus, and V minus times V minus. V minus times V minus is of degree negative 2. If M is to be of degree negative 1, the output should be of degree negative 3. There is nothing in degree negative 3, so the output must be 0. V plus times V plus is of degree 2. N should be of degree negative 1, so the output should be of degree 1. There is only one thing in degree 1, and it's V plus. In principle, you could have written here a constant, A1 times V plus. V plus tensor V minus is of degree 0. M of that should be of degree minus 1. There is only one thing in degree minus 1, and it's V minus. Again, you could, in principle, you should have written here an A2. Okay? Well, this is the same as that, by because m is to be symmetric, to be commutative, so this should be also a2 times v minus. Now for delta. So delta of v minus, well, v minus is of degree 1, delta of it should be of, sorry, of degree minus 1, delta of it should be of degree minus 2. So the only thing you can write in degree minus 2 is v minus times v minus. But there could be a constant here, a3. And v plus should be going to something of degree 0. The only way to get something of degree 0 is v plus times or v minus plus or v minus times v plus. Maybe there would be a constant a4 here and a5 here, but a4 is equal to a5 by the symmetry. So it's really four constants. What to put here, what to put in these two places, what to put here, and what to put here. There is a unique choice for these constants which satisfies associativity and co-associativity and the remaining condition. You just check it. And the unique choice, up to some rescaling, up to changing, up to separately rescaling v plus and v minus. Anyway, the unique choice is the one written here, namely all constants are equal to 1. So you take all constants are equal to 1 and you're done. Now everything is defined. Okay? Everything is defined. We've set it up so that the differential squared is equal to 0. And it remains to actually prove. Now statement number 2 makes sense. We still have to prove it. Okay? In principle, proving is always easier than stating. Okay? Once you know what the statement is, proving it is essentially an exercise. So, it's late, and I lost my mouse again, and there's no way I can do the whole proof, but let me give you a sketch of the proof, and I'll just take it from my own paper on the subject. Where's the PDF? Here. And I think I will end with that. So, here's the sketch of the proof. Are you still awake? Do you care? Do you really? No, that's a fair answer. I mean, let me tell you what is the main lemma. So, it has two parts. So suppose you have a subcomplex C prime of a complex C. So this is a chain of vector space, this is a chain of vector space, that's a subchain. That of course forms, sorry, this is a subset, a subchain complex of this chain complex. Then this allows you to form a quotient complex, C mod C prime. Okay? So the claim is, one, if the homology of C prime is equal to 0, so if you take a subcomplex of a big complex, which is acyclic, which has no homology, which is exact, then modding out by it does not change the homology. Then the homology of C is isomorphic to the homology of C modulo C prime. And two, if when you mod out you get cyclic, something acyclic, so if when you mod out you kill all the homology, then it means that the two original things had the same homology. Then basically C prime had everything that was in C to be killed. So if the homology of C modulo C prime is equal to zero, then the homology of the subcomplex is isomorphic to the homology of the full complex. Okay? And in fact, there is a third part of it, of this lemma, which will be obvious once I prove the first two parts. Okay? So, proof. Did I take a picture of this? How do you remember? Maybe I should sort of make a marking. Each time I take a picture of something, okay. So, proof. Well, there is a short exact sequence of chain complexes. 0 goes to C prime, goes to C, goes to C modulo C prime. And whenever you have a short exact sequence of complexes, you get a long exact sequence of homology groups. So you get HR of C modulo, let's call it HR minus 1, of C modulo C prime going to H